Well, Bill, it's nice to have you on the Bonner Breakdown. You know, you've been a long-standing voice on the airwaves in the community, what, since 2004?
About 2004, yeah.
So it's nice to have you on the program, and
it's my pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
It's great. We start off every episode with what we call the good report. What we want to do is think of something that's good that we like to highlight, something positive. Did you have anything that you wanted to share that was a good report?
That's easy.
Okay.
I live in Sandpoint.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I'm away from the combat zone of the big cities, and winter is two-thirds of the way over.
Winter is
even though we have a little bit of snow today.
Yeah, well, it was good. It's Thursday, right? So the show's going to come out tomorrow, so it's good to know that we at least got a little bit more snow cover up in the mountains.
Yeah, which is good for Schweitzer.
And it's good for the summer, right?
Because
otherwise it's hot and smoky.
Yes.
All summer. So, yeah, I'm always glad to have a heavy winter.
I've always thought I was blessed to be able to live up here.
It is amazing.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My wife and I were sitting in Trinity at City Beach this summer, and you look out over the lake, you're eating a great meal. You're looking at, I've had Justin on the show, you know, you're looking out, you just kind of pinch yourself a little bit, like, wow, this is a place we get to live and enjoy life. It's just amazing.
I appreciate the intimacy. I come from the metropolis,
mm-hmm.
where you could live next door to your neighbors for 2 or 3 years, and the only thing you know about them is what kind of a car they drive, because they park it outside because their garage is full
mm-hmm.
of stuff. And up here,
mm-hmm.
It's much more intimate, and I think people are just friendlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's good. That is a good report. You know, we're grateful for where we live. You know, I was thinking about mine and my good report, and I was thinking about how often we hear about someone who's having some adversity and how the community just rallies. You know, so often we see that. I was thinking about a recent story. I don't remember exactly which one it was, but there was a recent story where, young family going through hardship, and everybody just pulled out all the stops to help them get through a crisis. And, you know, for me, that's part of that intimacy piece that you were talking about. Like, we get to know each other well enough and help each other out. Even when we disagree on certain things, we still see each other's humanity pretty good.
Well, and I think the reason for that, this is just my opinion.
Yeah.
When I go downtown
mm-hmm.
just to walk around for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
I see 25 people I know by first name.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think that kind of, it attaches some intimacy to a person that's been in a bad traffic accident
mm-hmm.
or their house is burnt down.
Mm-hmm.
You say, I know that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can
yeah.
help a little.
That's right. I just love it. I love it about living here, you know, getting to know people. I've lived up here since 05, and, I absolutely love it. Yeah, wouldn't trade it for the world. So.
This coming Monday, March 1st, will be 27 years for me.
Congrats.
We hit North Idaho on March 1st. Yeah, we spent the night in Spokane because the weather was a little bad, so we hit... We hit the state line about 9 o'clock in the morning on March 1st of 1994.
Wow.
And it's really strange. I got to tell you something. We had made arrangements with a realtor that was going to help us buy property, but she also found us a rental.
Okay.
And it was over in Westwood.
Okay.
So she shows us the rental and everything, and we're getting all unpacked and everything. And we said, well, is there anything else that we can do? Do we need to do anything else? She says, no, you're pretty well set, but I would suggest one thing. She says, I'd go up to the DMV and get those California license plates off your car.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
And that's true today.
Uh-huh.
It's still true.
Yep, it is. Well, hey, cheers. I'm going to grab your mug there. We'll give a little cheers to the good report. All right. And congrats on 27 years. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Now, when you were in California, you were in law enforcement, right?
Yes.
Okay. What did you work? The sheriff's department?
No,
local
I'm retired from the Los Angeles City Police Department.
Okay. Great. Okay.
Yeah. And then I lived in L.A. County and Orange County. And then I left Orange County in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
It just got to be too much concrete, too mm-hmm. much traffic, too many people. The crime was coming in to mm-hmm. Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
The taxes are outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people complain about taxes up here. It's nothing compared to to California.
Yeah.
So came up here and got involved with a lot of stuff since then, and I don't regret it at all.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
So move up here 27 years ago, 94, and what were you doing? What was on your plate?
Well, at first, not too much.
Because you're retired law enforcement. I was retired. So you had a pension.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was a substitute school teacher.
Okay.
For, at that time, it was the Bonner County School District. I guess it was whatever it was called then. So from September of 94 until June of 1995, I was a substitute school teacher. I taught at the high school, middle school, and elementary school levels. And at the end of the semester, in June, when I got home on the last day, I said to myself, if I'm not an alcoholic today, I never will be. I never realized what it was like teaching. I thought it was a good job with summers off and 2 weeks of Christmas. Unbelievable.
Wow. So just a highlighted appreciation for the teachers.
You know, I did. And then for a while, for 6 years, I was part of the adjunct faculty at Lewis and Clark State College.
Okay.
And the difference teaching in college compared to elementary and secondary is unbelievable.
Right.
Because in college, if they don't show up at class, I don't care. They've paid their tuition. And if they don't want to learn, I still get paid.
Yep.
But just the paperwork and the control that you need, especially in the middle and high school. And when they see a substitute teacher, they see a target.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we'll teach this guy a thing or two today.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome to our world. Eh?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So when I finished that first year, my first and only year as a substitute school teacher, it changed my whole perspective on teaching.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Then what?
Well, I worked 3 years on a task force for the five northern counties that had to deal with domestic terrorism.
Okay.
And I was headquartered out of the Kootenai County Sheriff's Office in Coeur d'Alene.
Okay.
And that was 96 through 99.
Okay.
And that was an extremely interesting job. I got to do a lot of traveling. And I worked with the five sheriffs in the five northern counties.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, that's what, 95 was when we had the Randy Weaver
Yes.
incident.
Well, no. Either 90. Yeah, when was it? 94, 95.
95, I think, was when.
And then I went to work for the task force, and I worked under Sheriff Pierce Clegg at that time for the Kootenai County Sheriff's Department. And
I spent 3 years. I grew up in Spokane.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I was.
So I spent 3 years doing that. That was extremely interesting. So
yeah, big takeaway from that season. Anything that is worth noting?
Well, you know, it was a continuation of the division that we see in this country today.
Right.
They were part of. I don't even know if you could call them right wing. They were just anti-government.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of people on the left that for some part are anti-government because the way that they perceive the government. But yeah, and it's gotten worse today.
Mm-hmm.
I thought things were a little bad in 1996, but they're a lot worse today.
Yeah.
The divide that we live in is terrible. But on the other hand, I don't see it all that. We have division up here.
Mm-hmm.
But we're civil about it.
Mm-hmm. For the most part.
For the most part.
Unless you're on social media.
Well, yeah. That's a vicious venue, in my opinion.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
It's really vicious.
Yep.
So.
Yep, there's an anonymity to it, I think, and a cloaked ability to say a lot of things that you would never say to somebody in person, in real life.
Yes.
Face-to-face would never happen.
No. It
because
wouldn't.
cause you can see that people are genuine, you know, and you have to read minds pretty bad to believe some of the things that we believe about people. We have to read the most vile intentions into their mind in order for them to do it. So, yeah, it's interesting.
So, yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's jump into your radio world.
Okay.
Right, because had you been going on the radio from time to time between before 2004?
No. I had always wanted to do talk radio. When I was a teenager, 16, 17, I had my little Volkswagen and my AM radio.
Right.
When three or four of us would get in the car to go someplace and somebody would turn on the radio, it would be talk radio. And they would look at me. Or country western music. So I was a little bit of a nerd.
Especially for California. Yeah, that's a whole different world.
I've been listening to talk radio since, I don't know, 63, 64. Okay. Yeah. But I never had, you know, when you live in Southern California, you just don't do talk radio. But when I got up here, I got the bright idea one day to put together a little bit of a prospectus and a program outline, and I took it over to Blue Sky Broadcasting, and it took a couple of months, but all of a sudden Dylan Benefield, who is still the program manager there, he's one of the owners, he said to me, are you ready for this? And I said yes. He says, I don't want you coming to me 10 minutes before your program starts and telling me you don't have a guest or something to talk about. And that's kind of scared me.
Uh-huh.
So for the first four or five weeks, I always had two topics.
Okay.
Just in case the guest didn't show up.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because that does happen.
Yes. But after that, I didn't have to think of something. Uh-huh. There was so much going on.
Yep.
And then by that time, I had people calling me. I'd like to come on your program.
Right.
Or somebody would say, why don't you get this wacko on, or this screwball on.
Okay.
And before I knew it, I was saying to people, I can't see you for a couple of weeks, but I'll put you on last program
Start
in April.
Scheduling them out. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And from that point on, it just went.
That's great. You know, when you first got into it, what was the biggest challenge you had?
My own self-confidence.
Okay.
For the first 4 or 5 weeks. Then I noticed that if I was in the store at Safeway or in a restaurant or something, people would come up and say, are you Bill Litzinger? And I'd say, well, that depends. I don't know. And sometimes they say, I really enjoy your show. Or they'd say, yeah, you're from California. It shows. So
that's hilarious. Yeah.
But I was told by somebody that in talk radio, there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Right.
If they're listening to you, that's what you want.
Well, you know, 90s had a huge boom in talk radio. I think mainly, you know, Rush drove a lot, you know, on conservative talk.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, he just passed. But, you know, you look at how many different industries got birthed out of that boom in the 90s.
Oh, absolutely.
Amazing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And so many different organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And so many organizations that were somewhat unheard of,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden we're in the limelight.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, after, I don't know, 5-6 weeks, I had people calling me.
That's great. All right. So worst guest you ever had, like the worst interview, like went horribly start to finish.
I didn't have an interview. I had some interviews that were C pluses or Cs.
Okay.
The worst guest I ever had. And I got to say, I've had guests from all philosophical perspectives.
Sure. Yeah.
And there's only one of them in the 15 years I did it that I wouldn't sit down with and have a meal. And it was this goofball from Bonner's Ferry. He was a pastor, but he was one of these pastors that believed the Jews aren't from Israel. Stuff
totally.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
And after the program, I found out some stuff about him that was even worse than some of the things he said on the program.
Right.
But he's the only one of all the guests I've had that I wouldn't shake hands with or sit down and have a meal with.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, if you had that guest on today, there'd be a giant boycott of the show, right? Like, I think in today's climate, if you were to give a platform to somebody who, you know, clearly is leaning into some areas that just aren't true, right? Aren't, you know, like, I think we would have some problems in today's climate, wouldn't you think?
Well, I did talk radio up until August, and I never felt that I was going to be the victim of of the cancel culture. I had people from time to time that call the station
Sure, upset.
upset,
Absolutely.
or they wanted
Their side
their
heard.
side of it, and that I've never had to say to somebody, "I can't get your side on because I'm just too busy." Because there were times when I had scheduled out where I could do something and read some letters to the editors and get some laughs out of those. So I could always say, well, I don't need to do that. I'll get this person on. I never had to have anybody wait more than 2 or 3 weeks. But there was only a couple of times that the station was called, concerned about some of the things I'd said. And that's part of talk radio.
It is.
I think if you don't have somebody complaining, maybe you're doing something wrong.
Right. Well, and you know, the reality is that even if you're just doing an interview, people are going to disagree with the fact that you're interviewing a person.
Oh, I've had people say, "Why did you have him?
Right.
Why did you have her?"
I mean, I've had that, you know. I mean, I'm 48, 49 episodes in, and already, you know, I've had some complaints and stuff, so you just kind of get used to it.
I looked at it this way. I only had to say this a few times, but I'd say, well, if you're really upset with my content, there are other programs being put on the air at the
You don't
station.
have to play it.
You don't have to listen to me. And sometimes I found out that people would call me on almost a semi-regular basis complaining, but they knew more about the program than I did because they listened so well. I said, well, I'm doing, there again, you're doing something right.
That's right.
So,
Okay, so favorite. Who is your favorite person to interview?
oh gosh, I wasn't ready for that. Probably Patty Duke. She has since passed, but she lived in Coeur d'Alene at the time. And I didn't know how to get in touch with her. So a friend of mine who worked at one of the animal shelters down there, because she was big into the animals and things like that, says, here. And she gave me her address. So I went over there. And her husband was in the front yard. So I introduced myself, said, this is what I'd like to do. He says, well, I'll ask her. 2 days later, she calls me and she comes up and she does the
Wow,
program
cool.
telling me about her struggles in life. She had a rough life. It was a great program. Other people that I had, well, one of them was a school teacher from New Jersey. She was a minimalist. She only had two or three dresses, one pair of shoes. A school teacher, her and her husband were both school teachers. And she was so interesting to talk to. First of all, because she was educated. Secondly, because her approach to life was so simplistic. She almost made the Amish look interesting. Am I allowed to say
I think so. I mean,
that?
they're minimalists, right? I mean, they do minimal stuff,
But she said something interesting. We talked for 2 or 3 hours on the phone before she even came on the program over about a 2 week period. And she took some heat from some of the female teachers at the high school because she wore the same dress every day, same pair of shoes. But she said her husband, who wore a blue tie, a white shirt, and tan pants every day, nobody noticed it. Who cares what the men wear? It's what the women wear.
Isn't that interesting?
And I got a few comments, and I can remember them. One of them said, "You go, girl. We're way too materialistic in this country." And another comment said, "I'm disappointed in you. You make a good salary. You're paid by the taxpayers, and you're probably putting all of your money in the bank. You're hurting the economy." Which, to a certain extent.
Today's economy, not maybe her retirement economy, is going to be great.
Yes.
And, who's to say?
And so, and the way I found this lady is I was reading USA Today, and there was an article about her.
Okay.
So I sent an email to the school district. They sent me a place where I could go into and get the faculty's email address. And I clicked on it and sent her a couple of paragraphs. And she called me. She says, "Is this for real?" And I said, "Yes, this is for real. I saw your article in USA Today." She said, "Bill, it's been a whirlwind."
Uh-huh.
I can imagine what it was like locally in New Jersey.
Right.
Okay. Making the USA Today a big half-page article on her.
Wow.
But she said 5 or 6 years before that, she said they had a 3-bedroom, 1-bath house, 5 children, her and her husband. They all got along fine. Now, she said her 2 younger daughters were not into this minimalist thing at all. Their closets were full of clothes, mm-hmm, shoes, mm-hmm, everything.
That's funny.
Very interesting lady. In fact, it was more interesting talking to her before she went on the air than when she did. Hmm. And that's one of the times where I was just so disappointed that we only had 55 minutes.
Wow.
We could have gone on.
Yeah.
About the impact of it, the sociology of it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And the fact that nobody has ever said anything to her husband. And for 2 years in a row, we wore the same clothing every day.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah.
That's wild.
But most of the guests I've had, some of them have been had to call in because they were from out of state. I've had different state senators, Congressman, mm-hmm, Russ Fulcher,
mm-hmm,
call in. And then, but the majority of them are just people like you,
mm-hmm,
right around, yep, town here, businessmen.
Yep.
That's
great.
Yeah. So. Hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, being on the air for that long, what impact do you think you had? You know, like for that 17 years or 16 years of being on the air at Blue Sky, what was the impact?
I think it must have been pretty good because I had political candidates on my program,
uh-huh,
who had been in politics, but that had never gone on another radio program. But they came on mine.
Hmm.
I don't know whether they felt I was going to be fair and unbiased or because they figured enough people listen,
okay,
that it's worth their time to come and be on, sure, the program. But I interviewed, yeah, different politicians who had been in office and were seeking reelection,
mm-hmm,
and had told me I've never accepted an invitation to come, mm-hmm, on a radio program.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great. That's great. I still got a couple that haven't even responded. So, you know, I mean, that's usually the... You know, you'll get a few that are willing to go on anytime, anywhere, like they're just game for,
yes,
it. I mean, we've got a few up here that'll just like, "Oh, you want me on anytime? When do you want me?" You
and know? I've had a couple that not only did they not reply that they weren't interested, they didn't reply at all. So
no, not even just, like, yeah, a whisper.
Yeah, no, uh-huh, they didn't say no thanks, Bill. Maybe, uh-huh, next time. So that's just... Uh-huh. That's just the way it
is.
Well,
I think right now, because the world is so divided, people want to know that they're not walking into an ambush or, you know, that they're not going to get blindsided,
yes,
by a line of questioning that they're like, I'm not interested in talking about. Like, so for example, when I was interviewing Steve Johnson,
yes,
who ran recently, and I asked him about national politics, and he's like, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about right here.
Yeah.
You know, and that was his mind. I'm like, oh. Great, you know, so I think some people wonder, you know, like maybe aren't skilled in that arena, but you know,
I've had certain guests say to me, "Are you going to take calls from the outside?"
Mm.
I said, "Oh, absolutely," and a couple of them have said, "Well, then I would prefer not to be on." For some reason, they,
wow,
feared somebody calling in and asking them a question that was either embarrassing or that they didn't know the answer to.
Well, and I think also, a lot of people don't actually ask questions when they call in.
I'm pretty tough on those. If they,
okay,
start to get personal, I just
right,
I just say to my, I guess, give my program engineer the old thing at the neck, you know, cut them off.
Cut them off, yeah.
I made it clear that they can ask a question, they can give an opinion, but you don't get personal at,
yeah,
all, especially about somebody's physical appearance. Mm. Because I had a couple of people that I was fearful when I told them who was going to be on my program, that they were going to refer to their physical appearance.
Hmm. Interesting.
But I had very few callers in all those years that I had to say, well, thank you for calling, and signal my program engineer to cut them off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, good.
For the most part, it was very civil.
Yeah, yeah, good, good, good. Yeah, so impact-wise, seems like, you know, a lot of people were able to listen. You had a lot of good guests on. Do you feel like there was anything you left on the table, things that you wish you'd still got done there while you were on the air? We'll talk about you leaving and stuff in a minute.
Yeah. There were some things that I would have liked to have done, but I got to tell you, for the 14 years I was there, with the exception of one incident, I was treated very well.
That's great.
I was treated, I got to tell you, a lot of the employees, you know, were complaining. I guess, well, I don't know what you're complaining about, but management treats me darn well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Good. Yeah, good. I've been on, I was never on your show, but I'd been on with, you know, Barbara Carpenter and a couple other different people over the years, you know, just doing interviews on housing stuff with the housing agency. But yeah, that's good. So, you know, let's dive in a little bit about you leaving. I know there was a big write up in the B, kind of explaining what seemed to have happened. And so the reporting, you know, seemed to be that dealing with the asphalt plant in Sagal, and that you brought somebody on that, you know, caused a little bit of an uproar. And then for whatever reason, you were let go or relieved of your duty or whatever that was. So tell us a little bit about that process and what was that like?
Well, we did a program, and my guest was Jonna Plant, who is kind of the spokesperson for this group in Sagal that is concerned about some of the zoning changes that are being considered by the Bonner County Commissioners. So she was on my program, and she said some things. And I also said some things. But everything that I said, I got out of public records. Now, there's a lot of public records out there that nobody's ever going to see, because who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Who cares if somebody had a lien against you for $200 10 years ago? I mean, it's irrelevant, really.
Mm-hmm.
But I had gotten some information, and I brought it out, and Blue Sky Management got a phone call. At least this is what I was told.
Sure.
That Lana Kay, who is an advertiser at Blue Sky, was going to quit advertising if I was allowed to be on the air. So I had a discussion with Dylan Benefield, and I was done. But it's really strange. The discussion that I had with him was on a Thursday evening, because I had a program on Friday. I also did not just The Voice. I did Face-to-Face with Deb Crossett.
Right. And you've had different people on Face-to-Face.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Over the years.
Yeah. Oh, sure. We've had guests there also.
Mm-hmm.
But so I sent an email to Jonna on Friday afternoon saying that I'd been released from my responsibilities because of the program that you and I did about a week ago. And she was upset. So on the next day, on Saturday, I'm walking out of Super One with my groceries, and this lady comes up to me, and she says, "Bill, don't you worry. We've got your back." I don't even know her. I didn't know what she was talking about until I got to my car. Then I started getting emails that saying, "You need to get back on the air in some way, shape, or form."
Okay.
"And not let this type of censorship take place." So I started thinking about it, and I checked with Chris Bessler, and he said, "Well, come on down and we'll talk about it." And I know a couple of people, when I told them what happened, wrote letters to the station showing their disgust about what happened. But that's the price you pay sometimes. The nice thing about doing a podcast, you don't have to answer to anybody. You don't have to worry about offending one family because of this or that.
Mm-hmm.
But the strange deal about it was, I always had a limit on my guest. Twice on one topic and that's it. Because there's so many things to be said.
So many.
So Jonna called me and I said, Jonna, you've been on twice. She says, but I've got some stuff from public records that I think needs to be said. I said, okay, this is it. The third time, and please don't ask me again. So she came, she came on, and the whole thing blew up. Well, for the Lynn Scott family, for making such a fuss over this, I think it would have been better for them to forget the whole thing, because their actions with this. Now, Lana Kay, from what I understand, is the former wife of Frank Lynn Scott. Okay. If they had just waited 4 or 5 days before they blew their top, they would not have some of the legal problems they have today. Because I had made it clear to Jonna, that's it. But I think they thought, well, this is going to be carried on his program for months and months. It wouldn't have been. That was it.
Interesting.
So sometimes when you see a sleeping dog, you don't want to wake it up for fear it's going to bite you.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I've worked with Lynn Scott's in real estate over the years. I was in mortgages prior to moving into the housing agency. And, you know, I've always had a great relationship with them and I've always, you know, really enjoyed working with them. But, you know, this is a whole nother ball of wax with what's happening there at the plant. And I just read the news, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you just hear what you hear. And I'm not either for or against it. So I'm just kind of like, well, okay, I don't live in Segal. You know, like I think a lot of like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
this, it seems like it's been drawn out forever.
Yeah.
Because I remember writing a letter to the editor 13, 14 years ago about this when they tried it. But that board of commissioners back then was much more sensitive to the needs of the local residents there then than I think this board of commissioners is.
Okay.
And people came to the planning commission meetings. There were letters to the editor that were written. And all of a sudden, you didn't hear about it anymore. And then just a couple of years ago, it kicked up again. So that's where we're at. And the sad part about it is, I think the only people that are going to make any money off of this are the lawyers.
Probably.
Which is true in most cases.
Yeah. So obviously, you broke your own rule one time, and then, you know, I think I it's not lost on me, you know, to go, hey, I only give people two. Okay, I'll give you a third one and having it blow back on you.
Yeah, and you know, it caused so much. I have never met any of the Lynn Scotts.
Okay.
And yet I've had people come up and say things about them that I wonder, why are you telling me this? If you don't like them, you tell them.
Yeah.
You don't need to
That's
tell me.
Unnecessary.
Yeah.
It's unnecessary.
And
so
I went to one planning and zoning commission meeting probably four weeks ago. And that's the first time I even knew what Matt Lynn Scott looked like, because he recused himself because they were discussing something that is close to his family.
Mm-hmm.
I've never met any of the Lynn Scotts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
great people.
Yeah.
I really enjoy them a lot.
Yeah.
One of the things that's interesting with, you know, being in the media world, you get used to the news, right? You get used to the flow of information about what's happening in the community. And at a certain point you go, you know, I could probably do something about this. And you ended up running for Sandpoint City Council at one point.
I did.
Didn't you? Yeah.
7 or 8 years ago. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What spurred that on?
Well, at the time, I'd been going just to a couple of the meetings.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, Justin Shuck and Jamie Bruner were members of the city council.
That's right, I remember. Yeah.
And I thought to myself, these are two pretty neat people. I trust them. They've got some scruples. They're honest people, and they care about Sandpoint. So, and Jamie Bruner, before she was Jamie Bruner, she was Jamie Davis. She'd been on my program a couple of times and was an extremely fantastic guest. I mean, she just, she could just answer any questions.
That's great.
So I called Justin one day, and he was up for re-election, and I said, I'd like to contribute to your campaign. I think you do a great job. I'd like to support you and help you get some votes. And he says, not necessary. He says, I'm not going to run for re-election. And he said to me, but if you run, I'll support you. And I thought, oh, whatever. So we talked for a few minutes.
Right.
And I hung up.
I like Justin. Yeah.
So I called Jamie Bruner. And I said, if you want some help with your campaign, I want you to come on my program. And I'll be willing to make a financial contribution to you. She says, well, Bill, I can't. I work in Coeur d'Alene, and the drive is just too far to live up here. So my husband and I are moving to Coeur d'Alene. She says, have you ever considered running? And I'm thinking, well, maybe Justin and Jamie really aren't my friends. They're just trying to get rid of
me. They're sucker punching. Yeah.
And so I talked to her on the phone for a while, and I said, what the heck? I'll do it. And, you know, I got to tell you, of all the people that I contacted, going door to door and going to, you know, all the things that the candidates go to.
That's right, yeah.
I had maybe one or two people that were a little bit rude. Not really rude, but just, you know, no thanks. Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
Everybody else, I made so many friends just talking to people.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, and to be clear, like, that wasn't a successful campaign.
No,
right?
It wasn't.
Right? Who ended up winning that year?
Bob Camp. I came in fourth. There were three openings. Open. Mm-hmm. Bob Camp, Bob Camp. Would it have been Rongstad? Was he on the, is that when he ran for the council? Or was he still on planning?
Shelby was on planning, and then he was appointed by Ogilvy.
Okay. Right, I think council. So. Yeah. I can't remember who Bob Camp was third. I was fourth. And then
it might have been a re-election year for Shelby.
Okay, maybe it was.
I think maybe that's it.
And so
I don't know. We'll have to ask him. I'll have him on soon. So
I was fourth, and it was surprising. There were 11 candidates that filed, and one of them dropped out. So there were 10 candidates.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But it was a fun time. I enjoyed going out and meeting the people, and I'm not that type of a person.
Was there was there conflict in between the candidates at all, or
no?
You know?
Okay. No.
Unlike this last year, this last round.
Yes. I didn't see the conflict. And I know that I had people that came up and shook my hand and listened to me that were not going to vote for me.
Correct, yeah.
But they were very, very pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, let's talk a little bit about, I'm just curious, you know, you've lived up here, you know, 27 years in March, and what are you seeing as some of the biggest changes up here that you're not really a fan of?
Well, for one thing, I don't know how you stop it, but the growth. And I guess I was kind of selfish. I'm here. We can, instead of Trump building the bridge or the fence on the southern border, maybe he should build it on the southern border of the Long Bridge. Because Litzinger is here, and we don't need anything else.
We're good. Yeah.
It's
growth is a big issue, and I, My last guest was Dan McDonald, and we talked a lot about growth and the toll on the roads because they're looking at doing a road levy.
Yes, a road levy.
And so we talked at length about that. And but the growth is astronomical right now, way outpacing any of the estimates that Department of Labor or any of these studies that we've had done. I mean, it's going way past any of the things that they thought it was going to be.
And I think the sad part about it is that you've got young people here, young couples.
We do.
Salaries aren't the greatest here.
That's right.
And yet they've got to come up with some way to pay for the mortgage of a $400,000 house.
Yep, yep, yep.
It's just very difficult if you don't have some money.
That's right.
And I can see some of the hard feelings about the people that were born and raised here being outbid by people who come from different economies. Because
right.
the economy in Chicago, Denver, Phoenix, L.A., Seattle, and Portland is completely different than here.
Whole different world.
And they come in with $300,000 or $400,000, and they just say, I'll take it.
Yep.
And I can see where there's some hard feelings on that.
Or they sold their one-bedroom shack in San Jose worth $1 million.
Yes. And they've got more money than they need.
Yep.
And they come in here, and they see something, and they'll say, I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, that's definitely something that has to be worked on. I met with all the commissioners just recently to talk about what can we do around the growth for housing specifically. And there's no magic bullet. There's no great answer to the problem other than really, you can institute government control over development for new construction. Outside of that, it's the market.
But what do you say to a guy that 25 years ago bought a quarter of an acre so he could build his retirement income, a duplex or a triplex, and you say to him, sorry, you can build one unit there, but you're not going to build three units?
I agree. And so the only thing that we can come up with is large scale development is the only thing that I think they could potentially create some type of income or affordability restriction on is if you did over 50 units or something like that, because otherwise you're dealing with people who are developing their own private land in small unit developments
yes.
that are 3-4 units.
Yes.
And that's majority of what we're seeing right now is under 10.
Yeah. And I didn't think that it would be so busy during the winter because everybody says, well, you got to stop in November and then you start in April so that you're they started stuff in November.
Well, the weather helped.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're building all year round.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah,
they sell. Yeah. They sell.
Yeah, they do. They do. So I built two houses this year with the housing agency and we had them sold before we even broke ground. We had them sold, and part of our program at BCHA is nice because we have a 20% down payment program where we give them a no interest, no payment loan so that they can come up with their 20% down.
How does that work? What exactly, what is that?
Sure. So we will develop a house or we'll buy and rehab a house. And when we do that, we use funds through Idaho Housing.
Okay.
Okay. And then when the buyer comes in, they have to make less than 80% of the area median income. So if they make less than 8, which is over 50% of our county makes less than 80% of the area median income. So we've got a huge, and it's prorated based on family size. So family four has got to make less than 50 grand a year, essentially. And if they make less than 50 grand a year, we can give them a 20% no interest, no payment loan if they buy one of our houses.
So are you giving them the down payment then?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And they repay it.
Oh, they have to repay it.
Yeah. It's a loan. It's
okay.
Not a grant, but they're not paying any interest on the loan and they don't make any payments on it. So it's what we call a silent second lien. So you got your first lien, which would be your mortgage,
sure.
But then the second lien is this secondary loan that doesn't have any payments or interest on it. So for example, lots of people get a line of credit, right, on their home. That HELOC or the home equity line of credit is considered a second lien, right? So it's another loan that's attached to the property.
When do they pay it back? When they sell the house?
When they sell the house, or if they refinance it.
Refinance it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Yep. So, in the past, we started doing $10,000, then $15,000, and we did $40,000 for a while, and now we're Idaho Housing's willing to do up to a full 20% down payment for people in our region, specifically because the prices are so insane.
Yeah, they are.
We're the second highest housing market price wise in the state. Okay, next to Sun Valley, and we're sitting here in a beautiful area. We're in the bottom tier for incomes.
Yes, we are.
You know, so it's terrible. Like income in Ada County is way higher than here, right? In the city, right? The income's down south, and even in outside in McCall and in some of the other areas, or not McCall,
Meridian.
Thank you. So in some of those outlying areas, have way higher incomes than they have here. You know, so we've got some of the lowest incomes and some of the highest prices. So we've got a real unique housing mix, and part of it is obviously the growth, but I mean, who doesn't want to live here?
Yeah.
Who doesn't? And if you have capacity to, why wouldn't you? I don't blame anybody for wanting to move up here.
No, in fact,
I don't blame them at all. I'm not mad at them.
Socially, in the last 8 to 10 years, the people that I've met, my age group, 55 and over, so many of them were from places.
I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So many of them were from places like Denver, Chicago.
Yep.
Portland,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Seattle,
yep.
Sacramento, L.A.
Mm-hmm.
They're
mm-hmm.
coming from places that they just want to get away from.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, and, you know, one thing to keep in mind is that you're not going to have the services you had. You're not going to have some of the amenities that you had in the big city.
No.
And so just let that lie.
No, and you don't. You don't. You have to drive 95 miles to get to an airport.
Uh-huh.
When I lived in Orange County, it was 5 miles
uh-huh.
to Orange County International uh-huh. Airport. You have to deal with the weather.
Uh-huh.
But people that are coming from Denver and Chicago,
they get it.
That's
not a big deal.
But you get people from Southern California or Phoenix or Portland, and they come
yep.
in here and they say, "What is this white stuff on the ground?"
Yeah, yeah. Well, when I was doing mortgages, it'd be hilarious because we'd sell a home. I'd help a couple move up from California, and then, you know, winter hits in February. I see the home listed. They just
yeah.
come in and be like, "Oh, that's what they meant. I'm
yes.
out." You know,
and it can be a uh-huh. culture shock.
Totally, totally.
Yeah.
What's your favorite part about North Idaho culture? Like, what's the thing that you think, you know, having, you know, you get involved in stuff, you've been involved interviewing people all walks of life. What's kind of the thing that stands out to you the most?
The slow pace of life.
Yeah. Okay.
I like that.
Okay.
And I can enjoy it. Some people can't. They have, they're busy all the time.
Uh-huh.
I like the slow pace here. Heading downtown, just walking around. When my daughter visits, she's a walker. We walk the Bay Trail or we do something.
Wonderful.
And it's just, and being retired helps where I don't have to be someplace at a certain time. But I do notice I live off of Highway 2 right next to the Department of Lands in Forest Park. And sometimes I'll head out of my long driveway up to the highway, and there'll be 45 to 50 cars I have to wait for coming into Sandpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they're coming from, whether it's Newport, Priest Lake, Priest River, wherever.
Mm.
But they're just filing into.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, you'll find somebody that'll hit you with their lights, and they're going to slow down and let you sneak in. But yeah, people
wow.
are coming into Sandpoint.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's really amazing. It's really amazing. And you know, when you think about... I don't know if I already asked this, but, you know, looking at the community here, what are some changes that you're most, like, wish weren't happening? Obviously, the growth, anything else?
You know, it's my selfishness. I didn't want to see the growth.
Okay.
It's crowded.
Uh-huh.
You know, that would be the only thing. I haven't seen any, even though there are other people that are quite a bit concerned about what's happening in Sandpoint. And many of them say it's political, but I don't see it. You know, I think our political differences are exaggerated.
Agreed.
Except for the tiny part that might be on the far right, the tiny part that might be on the far left. For the most part, I don't see a problem. A lot of people say, well, Sandpoint's too liberal or Bonner County's too conservative. I don't see that.
Okay.
I've talked with most of the city council members.
Uh-huh.
Deb Ruin, Joel, Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
They're just normal people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They do a good job.
Yep. Yep. And everybody has different passions.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
We all got things that are going to spark our interest.
Yeah.
Get us fired up more than others, you know, you know, one of the ways that I try to always remember is that passion, that thing that sparks, that people are passionate about, well, that's what makes the community good.
Yeah.
There's even if I disagree with how they're going about their passion, it still makes the place better.
Yeah. It's remote enough that you can relax and get to a secluded area to take a nice walk in 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. But you also have, weather permitting, the farmer's market.
Come on.
All the lost in the 50s, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. COVID permitting.
Yeah, COVID permitting. That kind of makes it a neat place.
Yeah, really an amazing place.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's just awesome. So let's talk about your next chapter here, because we've chatted a little bit about getting a podcast going. You talked with Chris Bessler, who I've had the privilege of having, you know, sit down here and had a great conversation. Guy tells a great story.
Yes, he does.
I really appreciate Chris a lot. So tell us a little bit about what you got coming up.
Well, I'm thinking, what, 2 or 3 weeks maybe?
Yeah.
I think I'll be on the air.
Sure.
It's called The Voice North Idaho. It'll be a no holes barred.
Woo!
Yep, no holes barred.
Oh, you said no holes barred.
Yes.
It's going to be get real.
We're going to talk about just about anything.
Okay.
Politics, local stuff. We'll talk about some national issues if they impact
us here.
Sandpoint.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have guests.
Okay.
And sometimes I'll just solo it.
Uh-huh.
It'll be just me.
Uh-huh.
And I'll warn them before that in case they want to turn it off. But I'm going to I've already talked with some people. And I'm going to have a lot of the same guests on my podcast coming up that I had for the last 14
That's
years.
That's awesome. And, you know, just so you know, we have the technology for getting your phone. So if you're just recording, we can record right on the soundboard with a phone.
Yeah.
So,
and, so I'll have my email address is going to be, thevoice@northidaho.com. I was surprised that North Idaho was still available.
I think Chris owns that, right?
Oh, he does. Okay.
Yeah, I think Chris owns that domain. But all of your links, the links to your podcast, which will be coming up in a few weeks,
yes.
as well as email, if people want to get a hold of you or be
yes.
on the show.
Yes.
If they want to say, hey, you should have this person on,
yeah.
Any of that kind of stuff, that will all be in the show notes. So if you're listening now, it will be, you know, obviously in the information section for the show. And if you're watching online, you know, it'll be down in the info notes as well. Okay, cool. So, you know, you kind of seems like you're going to be self-publishing instead of using the AM radio waves. You're going to use the internet and just keep doing what you've been doing. Is that about right?
Yes. And okay. I think the good part about it is that you have to realize that a radio station has to have advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be somewhat... they have to have some control about what is said. And I hope that I will be able to do things that maybe they can't do on an AM radio station for fear of losing advertisers. So I might be a little bit more open.
Oh, okay, good. I thought you were going to say aggressive. But.
Well, that's also a word I could use, but I wasn't going to say it until you did.
I'll say it for you.
it's going to be aggressive. It's going to be no holes barred.
Yeah.
But, you can if I have somebody that says something really stupid, it can be edited out pretty easy before it hits the air, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But you wouldn't want to do that because that's where all the clicks come. Right, people will click on it if they know somebody said something crazy.
Well, I don't.
Come on, this is the internet we're talking about here.
I don't want to cheapen it, but I will say I'm going to be my program will it automatically go on the availability at 11 a.m. every Friday?
Yeah, we'll publish it to publish time, so it'll be published. Okay. Yeah, at the same time.
So that's going to start in a couple of weeks.
Great,
and I've already got two people that want to be on the program.
Giddy up.
So I think it will be easier this time starting out than it was 14 years ago because I have the self-confidence now and I've got a guest list that'll...
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
So I won't have that 4 or 5 week jitters.
Good. Good, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, you know, I think, you know, if you're able to provide content that people want to hear and they want to listen to it, they'll share it with their friends and get it out there. And, you know, I've had several of our shows get 400 or 500 views in a couple of days. Lots of people, you know, just watching, whether it was controversial, you know, having the back when in June we had the, you know, people that were advocating for the BLM marches, you know, come in. And then I had militia people on. I had people from all over, you know, all over the spectrum on the show, and those did really well.
Do you think that whole thing, these, what was it, 100 young people marching?
Yeah.
And we had 20 or 25 people. Was that overblown? I mean, I thought to myself, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Did it get to, because it was even discussed in Coeur d'Alene.
Well, they did the same thing in Coeur d'Alene, right?
They did the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think that on the left and the right, the thing that's propelling action today is fear. It's not reason. It's not principle, but fear. So I think if we can attach, like, so with the BLM march, that's a lot of that is based out of fear of what's, you know, what of the stories that we're hearing around, you know, police violence and things like that. And so, man, with that, that's bad. We don't want that. So we want to stand up for that. Or, you know, you have the fear that agitators are going to come in and begin rioting or begin, because that was the biggest fear from the people that were, you know, holding the guns. It was, okay, what's going to happen here? Is somebody going to do something stupid? Like, we want, you know, like, so I feel like just fear just surrounding the all of it, you know, it's not, some of it's principle oriented. You know, we use our principles to kind of justify what we do.
Sure, justify our actions.
Justify our actions. But I think there's a bigger motivator. And I think that that's most of our divide, you know, is based on fearing the other, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've noticed that in the last, well, ever since basically the election in November, I'm so tired of hearing about COVID-19 and the election. And we're already fighting with a new president who's only been in office, what, 6 weeks now or
something
four weeks?
Yeah.
And they're predicting that it could be even worse this 4 years around. And I'm thinking to myself, that's all you hear on the news. It is so depressing.
What do you think? I mean, why do you think that because I think that that's intentional on some level to put people in camps and get them divided and get them pitted against each other. Why do you think that's happening so much?
Well,
now?
Yeah, divide and conquer. And
but who's conquering?
Well, that's just it. I don't know. In fact, I have lost all faith in MSNBC, CNN, and Fox. They're like 8 or 9 year old kids tattling on each other all day long.
It's a crack up because, like, if you turn on Fox News and you see a highlight reel of CNN, you turn on CNN, and you see a highlight reel of Fox News. I'm like, wait, we're just reporting news on people's news. Like, what's happening?
And they tattle on each other and they tell on each other. And quite frankly, at the national level, I have very little faith in our leaders.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, they're in it for themselves.
Yeah.
And I just don't trust them.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the leaders locally?
You know, I think the Sandpoint City Council does okay. I think the Bonner County, I've had some serious issues on a few things with some of the Bonner County commissioners.
Sure.
But for the most part, they get things done. I think they do a pretty good job between the county and the city and ITD of keeping the roads clear.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
My taxes for what I get, I don't think I pay an awful lot in taxes compared to what I'm getting.
Agreed. Yeah.
So I don't know anything about the Dover people or the Ponderay people or the Kootenai people. They're so small, they're almost...
You don't notice them.
Yeah, you don't notice them.
Yep. Which is a gift and a curse for small towns.
But. Yes, a gift and a curse, yes. Yep. But for the most part, whenever I go into the county building, whether I'm going to the treasurer's office, the assessor's office, the county clerk.
The recorder, yeah.
I've always had good service.
Yeah.
Very polite people. And I never, ever had a problem with the city council people in Sandpoint coming on my program.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, my guest several times was Dan McDonald.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one thing about Dan, although I disagree with him on some things, he never said, what do you want to talk about? He says, you got some stuff, I'll be there. What are you going to ask me? He never said, what are you going to ask me? I have had other people say, well, what are you going to ask me?
Uh-huh. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And I said, well, this is, but, and same thing with the city council in Sandpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Woodward, our new state senator, or new state senator recently, he's been on my program. He didn't say, well, what do you want to talk about?
Yeah.
I'll just say, can you come on and fill us in?
He's one who's responded and said he would come on at some point. So I just need to get him scheduled. It really is interesting because, you know, locally, it seems like the issues aren't... I think like in June when the issue went to national, when the local went to this bigger national level, we lost perspective. I think a little bit about who we are here because everyone's responding to the large national stories. But I think for the most part, everybody seems to really have their heart here. And I appreciate that. Like their heart is really that this place be successful. And that we solve real problems that we've got here.
I think it's nice that we're almost, if I had my way,
I would have all that's deadly territory, man. Okay.
I'd call all the map makers in America and I would ask them to take Sandpoint off the map.
Off the map. Yeah.
You go from Coeur d'Alene to Bonner's Ferry on I-95. There's nothing in
between. Straight shot.
Yeah. Sandpoint doesn't exist.
Yeah, we need a cloaking device over the powerhouse.
Yes.
On the bypass.
Yes. You can't get off. That bypass takes you right up to Bonner's Ferry.
Sorry. Whoops. Interesting. Yeah. Well, you know, we're going to continue to grow. And I think the North Idaho ethos of a little bit independent, a little bit stay out of my hair, stay out of my way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to do my thing and don't tell me how to do my thing, you know, kind of mindset. I think it's that there's a place for that. And there's also a place for, hey, let's figure out how to come together as a community in the midst of growth. Like, how can we create an environment where we celebrate the growth and still maintain our North Idaho ethos, you know? And that's a challenge.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It really is. And, you know, who knows what will happen with that. But hopefully we can learn how to treat each other with respect and continue the process of...
A little civil...
Of having
civil
that
discussion.
Hospitality and the civility that is known for up here.
Yes.
We are known for that, you know. But we are also known for, you step on my toe too many times, we're gonna lay it down. And so that's an interesting kind of tightrope to walk, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But it's worth fighting for.
I think so. I think so.
Yeah.
What's your big take on any of the current projects or plans coming up with, say, the road levy or anything like that. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm wondering, instead of a road levy, is it legal to do an impact fee?
Well, City Sandpoint does impact fees.
Yes, they do.
On all development.
Yes. Well, almost every city does. But I'm wondering, if you're going to come in and build 10 or 12 houses, there's going to be an impact on our roads.
Yep.
Because you've got, if each house has 2.5 cars, that's putting another 25 cars on the road.
Well, and then you really are pricing out, you're adding even more price to the dollar amount on the house.
Yes, you are, but if you put in a levy, that's, what type of a levy were they talking about? Is it a levy on property taxes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then there again, you're, it's tough to find, it's tough to find a tax that is evenly divided according to everybody's income.
It's impossible.
It is.
Even sales tax doesn't work.
Yes, it doesn't work.
No. Nope.
Even when they give you back some at the end of the year, I'm still waiting for my check.
Aren't we all? Yeah. No, I think this one is a 2-year. It's a 2-year where they're going to go 2-year levies at a time, only for road infrastructure use of dollars, period. So no matter what, that money only can go to infrastructure on roads. So
if they are disciplined about it and stick to it, I would be okay. I don't like to have somebody put in a levy and then they start spending it all over town.
Yeah. Well, and I think communication and transparency and all that stuff's really important whenever you're talking about that stuff, which I always think is difficult with the school district. It feels like not really ever clear, super clear on it.
But for the most part, with the exception of that one huge levy, the people of Bonner County have always supported our schools.
That's right.
Ever since I've been here.
Yep.
The only levy that didn't pass was that, what was it, a $50 million something? Yeah.
The really, really, really big one that would have revamped the entire, most of the school buildings in the entire school district, plus had administrative pay, plus, you know, it was this big omnibus type of
that's
levy.
Tough to get past the voters.
It really is. It really is. And you know, it's hard because we do have different, you know, school superintendents every few years. We have had, at least Tom's local.
Tom was the local.
He's been here and you know, I've had the pleasure of having Tom on here. And, you know, I just think, you know, there's a lot of work to be done to, you know, get the messaging better on that. But yeah. Which they do it every 2 years.
Every 2 years they get it.
So, whatever happened with that? Did they pass? They got a pass, but then was it? I had about 6 months where I was out of touch with stuff. So,
well, the last levy passed.
It passed, but wasn't there a lawsuit trying to derail it because language was wrong? And
I don't think that went anyplace.
Okay.
In fact, I know it didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, it didn't. Right. There's always going to be those that are a little bit disgruntled, but
it was a
2-year levy and it passed, I think, with almost 60% of the vote.
And then they voted to make it permanent.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you know, lots of interesting stuff happening around here. Anything as we kind of head out that you feel like is going to be anything that you really want people to be aware of and know? Obviously, you got a podcast coming up. Anything else?
No.
Any final thoughts on leaving Blue Sky?
You know, it was. I'm a creature of habit, and I was there 14 years, and I knew everybody. And I was disappointed in some of the things that I was told afterwards that I had never seen before. But yeah, it was a nice environment, new equipment. My program engineers were good people. They kept me right on schedule. I mean, I knew exactly when I had 2 minutes for this and 3 minutes for that. But, you know, things change. Life changes.
Yeah.
And I think that if this podcast is successful, I'll be able to do things on the podcast that I couldn't have done at Blue Sky.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Well, you know, like, so... we built this, the housing agency built the studio, and now I rent the studio from the housing agency because, you know, I want the freedom to be able to talk about whatever I want to talk about. Not have to worry about whether or not the housing agency is impacted by a guest or anything like that. So now I rent the studio. My marketing company does, but you know, it's like, you know, we just, you do what you have to do because I think, so for example, I had Sage Dixon on. And, you know, we have Sage on and we have great conversation. We don't even have a conversation about the, you know, the current trans rights bill that was in the state legislature at the time. But I got called and we got calls here. We got calls, you know, to board members asking to cancel the show because I just, cause I had Sage on and people didn't like that, you know? So, you know, it's like, okay, let me take that out of your hands. You know, like, let me just take that off the table and I'll just do it privately.
Yeah.
You know?
It's too bad that because somebody doesn't like what somebody says that they want to.
I have yet to find where banning the books and banning speech and banning ideas was on the side of the good guys.
Well,
have you ever seen that historically, that those are the good guys?
Not only that, but you are giving publicity. You're just making the fire worse
every time.
Like I said with my last program with John Aplante, if everybody would have just been quiet, there wouldn't be the problems with the Lynn Scott versus other people here, because it wasn't going to go any further. And I think now that they may regret doing what they did. And it's weird that how some people come in to give you information that you would never really thought was relevant, or that you expected them to give you on when I was terminated. So it was nice to know that two or three people here that are very established in the community wrote letters, and that they sent me emails or they talked to me afterwards and said, we're sorry that you're off the air and things like that. That made everything actually worthwhile.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're valued.
You know, I think so, because I would go places and people would say, boy, that jerk you had on last week, I disagree with him completely. Well, I don't even know who these people are. They're calling one of my guests a jerk. I don't even know who they are, but they knew me. So it shows that, you know, at least somebody was listening.
Yep. That's good. Well, we're glad to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks
today
for having me.
Yeah, it was a good conversation. I'm sure we'll have more, and looking forward to your podcast coming up, and it's The Voice North Idaho. Links in the description. And again, if you're joining us today, like, share, follow, hit the button, hit the bell, get the notifications, and then share this out. And then also, something that I do after every episode is for those who are financial supporters of our show on Patreon, which is a service that's used where people can pay to get extra content. So I do what's called the Host's Afterthoughts. So, and I do a live stream that's just for the Patreon viewers that can get access to that. They get access to a live stream. And then I just talk about how the conversation went, what my personal thoughts were about our conversation. And as always, I will send you a copy of that when I'm done. So you can get all of my thoughts on how it went. And usually about 20 minutes,
okay.
20 minutes long, but that's one of the ways that we try and support the podcast here. So if you are watching and you enjoyed the conversation today with Bill, go to patreon.com/Bonner Breakdown and you can sponsor the show from anywhere from $5 to $100 a month. Whatever you feel like you want to invest, feel free. It helps pay for equipment and everything else that we do here. So with that, we'll be signing off. Any last thoughts?
Just thanks for having me.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, it's good to have you. All right. Well, with that, we'll see you again soon. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. You can find out more about this podcast at BonnerBreakdown.com. You can also support this show and get personal video updates and thoughts from our host at patreon.com/BonnerBreakdown. Thank you for joining us in the conversation.